What's shaking, everyone? Welcome to episode 3 of the New England Camp Podcast. This week, we are joined by Esther and Aaron from ACA business affiliate Camp Hire. Staffing's all the rage right now, and Esther and Aaron are going to dig into the data a little bit and talk about why speed and timing might be the two key factors you need to focus on when searching out new hires for 2023. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
All right, friends. Thank you all for joining us once again. This is episode 3 of the New England Camp Podcast. And because it is that time of year, we're talking about staffing, and we are joined by our friends from Camp Hire. Once again, I am Bud. I'm the Director of Membership for ACA New England. And as I just alluded to, we got some guests joining us, and they are from Camp Hire. So I'm going to turn it over to them just to say who they are, tell us some camp stories, and maybe if you can remember one of your first email addresses ever, just one of your first email addresses. Like mine was mycall99@aol.com, because while I go by Bud, my given name is Michael. So I thought it was cute, the mycall thing. And then there was a 99 baseball relation. And I think it's actually still active out there. So again, for the third time, Bud with ACA New England, I'm your Director of Membership and Engagement. And I'm joined by Esther and Aaron from Camp Hire. So I'm going to let them talk for a minute. Who are you all? What are you doing?
Awesome. Hi, thanks for the intro. My name is Esther. I am the founder of Camp Hire, along with my brother, Aaron, who will introduce himself after this. So yes, we are siblings. Sometimes it takes some time to uncover that. People are like, whoa, because I have a different last name. So that sort of doesn't give that away. Anyways, so I'm the founder here at Camp Hire. I spent many years at camp, small camp in New Hampshire, as a camper and then staff member, unit leader, and then went on to be a teacher. So I was a teacher for about 7 years teaching elementary school. And then, started Camp Hire as a side hustle, which is now a full hustle. Aaron and I always wanted to get back into the camping world for many reasons. One, that, we have a love for the community it brings and what it's given to us, as well as both of us met our spouses at summer camp. So we always say that our parents got their money's worth for sure. During the day, technically I have a day job aside from Camp Hire. I am a recruiter at Google. I do technical recruiting. So, so much crossover between recruiting here for camps. Even though, the demographic seems vastly different, it is not. All of the skills and all of the tangential, processes are the same. So I do have a lot of insight and, with that specific angle. I live in the Boston area, Needham, Massachusetts. I have two littles, two boys under the age of 3, and a dog named Denver. So that's my background, and I'll kick it over to Aaron.
All right. Thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Aaron Lyon, and I think what Esther left out is we come from a powerhouse camp family. We were staff brats. So our mom, I don't know, when we were little, was like, let's go to camp. And the three of us kids went, and our mom ran the daycare, and our dad would come up on weekends and swim the lake. And so it's, combined, it just became such a big part of our identities and our kind of family culture and friend culture. I feel like we're always trying to recreate little elements and stories of camp in our personal lives. I also have a day job. So I work for American Express. So I think, one of the unique aspects of our business and what we bring to the camp industry is that we have corporate expertise. Kate Moncada, who's our general manager, comes from the startup world. So we sort of bring, elements of how businesses run in different industries and in larger settings and apply it to camp. And I think it's a unique perspective. And I think camp can learn a lot from how things are done in the corporate sector. Camp Hire is, 4 years old at this point. Mm-hmm. This business sort of started from one camp saying, hey, I need some help with recruitment, and has now grown to a national scale with, 75, 100 camps, and the list grows every day. It's been really fun to help people have success in the space. And you know, we try to put ourselves in the shoes of camp directors as much as we can, and thinking about, like, man, there's a lot they have to manage. And recruiting is like a hard thing to do. It's just like, it's a full-time job. So the expectation that you have to do things like, you know, marketing and run your budget and capital planning and programming, and then on top of that, you have to recruit a city, is just such a tough ask. So we're like thrilled and sort of honored to be in this position to help camp directors have success in this way. I live in
Newton, Massachusetts. Who are you?
Oh, who am I? A little more. I have, like Esther, I have a family as well. I got two little ones running around. They'll probably bust through the door any minute here and crash the show. But I just moved from New York about a month ago. I was living in New York for about 10 years, and now living in Newton, Massachusetts. So that's all about me. I think we were talking about doing a little bit of an icebreaker here as to what our first emails were, right?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Right. Okay, I'll come back to that.
I'm not going to let you forget.
Yeah.
I know. So my first email, which started as an AOL screen name, is K9Luva88.
So bad.
K9Luva88. K9Luvva88.
Luvva, yeah.
Luvva.
And it's still in existence today, actually. I still need it to log in to random stuff here and there. I think it was a Yahoo account at the time. But I mean, we're a huge dog family. So Esther's got a dog. I got a dog. We've always had dogs around us, and it's just, that's us.
My dog might be coming outside any minute now and jump in the back. Her name's Miller. What about you, Esther? What's that early email address that's either cringeworthy, noteworthy, or it's just the first one you remember?
Okay. So this is sort of has like a dual effect. One is my weakness is I'm a horrible speller, which is really ironic because I taught like kindergarten for a long time, but thank God for spell check and technology. So I preface with that because my email was DanceEsther27 because I danced in high school. Still one of my favorite things to do. Anyways, dance spelled with an S at the end, which also started the word Esther, but the S was the S. I guess I can't really pronounce it without spelling it out, right? Instead of like E-S, I just used the letter S. And then the rest of my name and my birthday is on the 27th. So I am a bad speller, but this was intentional. I thought it was cute to like play Dancer with the letters. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It is not still in use. I do not ever use it. It is buried.
Does the Dancer monster ever come out?
Oh, daily.
Good.
Yes. Gotta keep many that dance parties with kids in the kitchen.
Well, actually, one of my favorite memories from camp, you know, 15 years ago, is Esther leading the entire camp in dances and ballet routines where everyone would participate. So that's a unique passion and skill she has, teaching dance.
So that's actually a perfect quick segue. I'm glad you all mentioned your future former 9-to-5s once this, you know, finally takes over everything. No, but your positions with other companies and what you do, because that does bring a lens into the conversation we're having and the suggestions that you all make and the stuff that you all put out there. Because we were talking about before, Aaron, and we're going to get into it in a little bit, you know, the data that backs it up, that, you know, you've been doing this for a while and you have the lenses to analyze this type of behavior, whether it's recruiting or, you know, so it's not just coming out of we heard this and, you know, anecdotal, which there's great value to qualitative anecdotal data. But for the purposes of clarity, today's conversations, anything that's brought up, you said that earlier, you're like, you know, we like to lean into the data to help people succeed in this area. So if y'all are cool with it, let's kind of get into it a little bit about what it takes to succeed in this area. And just as a clarifier again, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to be focusing mostly on overnight or quote unquote residential traditional, you know, camps versus the day camp experience, which is similar in many ways, but it has a lot of variables, or residential hiring has a lot of variables that just don't cross over. So we are going to be focusing mostly on that side of it. Correct?
Got it.
All yeah, right, totally. So I'll add another layer to it as well.
I want it.
Our focus is really on recruiting talent once the talent pool locally runs dry. So a lot of our data comes from national searches, And what we like to say is, you know, camp directors should do all their recruiting on their own. And then when they're totally exhausted, they come to us. So a lot of our experience are recruiting people who have never been to camp before. So it sort of informs how the data comes together, but I wanted that to be known. It's residential camps and also, you know, big national searches where we're exposing new audiences to camp.
That's perfect. So I came a little while back. You know, we just came off the staffing summit recently, and so obviously this is on top of everybody's brain. And for camp directors, it's almost always on their brains. But even before that, I was at some state level conferences, and the biggest thing that people said, you know, staffing obviously being that broad term, was, yeah, where are they? You know, we know these people exist. We know they want to come here. And from our conversations offline and also some stuff you all put out before, you know, you've pointed out that they're out there, but timing can also be so crucial, so key. And one of the issues that we were discussing at these conferences was what I've dubbed the world keeps spinning syndrome. And it's kind of a symptom of, we might still be hiring in a mentality that has worked traditionally or, you know, forever, but just like everything else in life, a lot has changed recently. And so there are more considerations that camp directors need to make. So timing being one of them, and you're going to talk about some of the other ones. So I just wanted to start that off with, this is on top of everybody's mind, obviously, as you all know. So where do we start? And either with this conversation or staffing in general, when we're talking about recruiting, like you said, new talent, what's the game? What's the gig? What's the scuttlebutt?
So there are a couple questions there, bud. I think the first one that's on everyone's mind is, you know, where do I start, and what's the cadence and the timing, which I think we'll get to. There are a couple other themes that hopefully Esther and I will touch on as we talk, you know, and there's really three things that camp directors need to be focused on. And, you know, the first one is, you need to expand your search to a national search. Most camps are hiring for scale, what we consider scale. You know, you need more than one person, you usually need a dozen. So in order to do that, you have to broaden your reach. And that requires some funding. So that's part of this discussion, as well as, you know, how to best spend your money. And then the last one we'll get into is speed. So we'll try to weave these three things into the conversation as best we can, but let's start with the timing thing. And usually we start hearing from camp directors starting in September, right? Everyone takes that like end of season breath and they're like, I got through it. And now it automatically just, their brains just turn on and start thinking about next season. So we start getting inquiries immediately. What we actually try to do is calm people down. They want to say, let's go recruit immediately. And we caution them to be really thoughtful, intentional, and strategic about when they turn the lights on for their actual recruitment activity. So we segment the year in a couple of different ways. The real recruitment activity part seasonally really should not kick off until March. Our data shows that if you're looking to do a broad search externally, March, April, May, and June are the times you should be active. The other times, you know, September, October, November, leading up to those, you really should be getting your ducks in a row. And what do we mean by that? It's thinking through, what does my marketing look like? Do I have enough money to fund my approach? Are my contracts in order? Do I want to automate anything so that I'm more competitive and can have, you know, more speed in the market? But it's doing all those other lead up activities, but not actually doing recruitment, right? Hold off on doing recruitment. And the reason we say that is because our data shows over the past few years that anyone that you hire off the street to work at your camp, if you hire them before April, there's a 50% chance they're going to show up at camp, literally a 50% chance. So take that to heart. We don't want you to spin camp directors. You know, it's a lot of work to do recruiting. And believe us, in the recruitment business ourselves, it's very frustrating to make placements in March and then slowly see them drop off, you know, one by one. I got a different job. My plans have changed. I have a family issue, right? Everyone's got a story. So try to align your activity with the candidate hiring market, which really starts to get going in the springtime.
And so real quick to kind of hone in on the specific, because this is a specific group you're talking about. When you say hiring somebody off the street, you know, before March, you're talking about brand new hires. This is not necessarily waiting until March to say to Jeremy, you did a great job last summer. Would love to have you back. What's kind of an ideal time for, and I think, is this what you meant a little bit earlier when you're talking about getting your ducks in a row? Is this part of the ducks talking to returning staff? Can you talk about just the returners real quick? And then we'll go right back to new hires. Because yes, that is the greatest need, I think.
Totally. Yeah. If you are talking to your returning staff, it should be before the last day of camp. If they are happy and they had a good summer and they are feeling those vibes, all jokes aside, have a contract and have them sign it. Like, actually get them to commit to next summer, you know, during the summer. You know, sometimes it's hard to think that someone would be willing to commit that early. But you're sort of going off of the energy of, I just had an amazing summer. I just feel fulfilled in helping change the lives of other youth. I also feel like I connected to the environment and to the staff here. And I feel supported. I want to do this again next summer. And you are, you know, using those vibes and that energy to get commitments, you know, that are real, instead of, you know, waiting even a month, even, you know, 2 months and say, hey, I'll circle back with you later. Obviously that's a tactic as well. If you can't get a signature right away, but you do lose that immediate energy, and, you know, being in person as well, right? Like having that person in front of you versus doing it over the phone or over Zoom. You know, there are certainly benefits to that. So yes, this information we're giving you is 100% based off of new hires, not returning.
Yeah, if you're having a nice sunset with your waterfront director and you're seeing the sailboats flapping in the wind, talk about next summer. I mean, lock it in. Give them that bonus right now, because, you know, I agree. And because, Aaron, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, March. I was like, because by March, in theory, and this is what your data is showing, is by March is when March, April is when the activity shifts, and that's when these pockets open up. And so if we want to go back to that, that time period real quick, and just pick it back up with then. So, all right, what are they doing? It's March, April time.
Yeah. I have a quick anecdotal story I want to share. So by nature, I am not a procrastinator. I like to have my list. I like to cross things off and I like to get things done. This does not lend itself well to, hey, Campire, you have 100 roles to fill. You know about them right now in October, but you can't do anything about it for the next 3 months. Doesn't sit well with me. So I would say up until last season, I was pretty adamant about actioning and starting recruitment. I remember signing a family of candidates to one of our network camps in our network in the beginning of January. So the two adults in the family were doing the ropes course and waterfront directors. There was a child going to camp and another child who was going to be a bunk counselor. Huge win, right? Like, we just get a ton of really important roles knocked off our list. The camp director is happy. We're excited. The entire family backed out before camp started. So those are the stories that are important to hear, because, you know, you have, again, checked that off your list. You have these people going to camp, but that 50% drop-off rate is so high. And in this instance, it was four or three roles that were really key players that we then had to backfill. But the, you know, the take home here is, don't spin your wheels then, because it's too risky. And you then stop any recruitment efforts that you are, you know, starting to generate because you think those roles are filled. So another just like piece of advice is, when you can, overstaff, right? So if you are starting recruitment early, or if you have a high volume of roles, so let's say you need 5 nurses, over hire in that department. You know, give yourself a little wiggle room, knowing that someone will drop out, hire 6 nurses. So, you know, in terms of bunk counselors, that's usually a high volume need. Even when you think you've filled all of your counselor positions, continue to hire, just because, again, data is showing that there is going to be a dropout rate. We've never seen 100% commitment work out and, you know, show up at camp and last through camp or even the first week of camp. So, you know, just thinking of that as, you know, you start to fill those positions, Again, as someone who wants to cross off the list and be done, I'm learning along with everyone else that the list continues and give yourself some cushion.
So what does that list look like? It's not, again, talking about striking when the iron is hot. And by the way, that those anecdotes. So when we talk about 50% drop off rate, 83% retention rate, or 97% follow through rate, do not quote me, quote Aaron when he talks numbers, not Bud. But when you talk about it, it's coming from these real life scenarios. These aren't just, again, this is data. This is what has been experienced. So what does it look like? When is quote unquote the iron hot for camps?
Yeah. I mean, like Esther said, I mean, if you start for April, there's really a false sense of security with the hires you've made. And it's across the board, actually. We've done data across nurses, kitchen crew, bunk staff, really everything. And interestingly enough, all of them have very similar rates of actual showing up at camp. Once you hit April, and you get into like the university circuits, right, where people are waking up to the fact that summer's around the corner, you're in really good shape. And we know that really basically by focusing on our major job boards. So if you take Indeed, for instance, which is the biggest job board in the world, and what we find is by far the biggest pool of candidates for camp, the most activity that we see starts April, May, and June. We have roles up there starting in the new year that get little amount of views, right? Little amount of traffic, and are basically just bleeding us, right? From, you know, we invest a lot of resources and money into our jobs, and they're just going to sort of be a slow trickle and kind of kill your budget. So as you think about putting money towards sponsorships on things like job boards, don't waste your time in January. It just doesn't work, right? You're gonna bleed your resources dry. Take your money, pool your resources, and put them into April, May, and June when candidates are ready to hire and ready to have interviews and ready to go. So we tell our camps, we say like, you know, we'll talk to you in February. You know, they're ready to hire now, and we're kind of cautioning like, hey, we're not gonna start this until February. We've learned that it only works when two people are ready to come to the table to talk about camp. It's too hard to be selling somebody on camp when there's snow on the ground.
It sounds to me like then this is that time, Esther, and we'll kick it over to you. It sounds to me that this is that time where going back to ducks in a row means planning strategically, but then just doing the organic rehiring, the organic, because you can nurture these relationships. That's, you know, spend your money literally later and spend your time now planning, preparing, securing, getting that foundation. Because like you said, instead of having a sprint from now until June, you can really sprint from April to June if you do it smartly. Smartly, this guy. Esther, sorry.
No, I just want to throw in a little caveat that we are referring to camps that do have a start date with staff week being mid to late June. I want to acknowledge that there are other camps that have different start dates and their season shifts a little bit earlier. So in that case, the months we're referring to don't really apply. So generally speaking, that would be pushed up. So basically 2 months before your staff week begins. I just wanted to put that clarification there because I know that there are other camps that start earlier than that June time.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And so the timing, we've talked about the timing, you know, and obviously, so I don't know if it's where is the next question I have, but what are the newer considerations that camps need to kind of be thinking of when they are looking for these? Again, we're talking about fresh hires, you know, obviously your internal network, work it. You're working that all the time, you know, as camp people, we're always networking, you know, with our own people, with other people. But when we're talking about, all right, we got to fill X amount of jobs, this many heads, this many nurses, that's that kind of brain. What's kind of new-ish, or what are kind of the messages that you're saying? These are things to start thinking about.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we're talking about how do you fill the gaps, right? You've done all of your internal recruitment, you have a bunch of returning, and then you still have these gaps. How do we fill them? And that's sort of where we kick in our expertise and how do you broaden your network? So I'll twist your question a little bit that it's not necessarily new. It's how you're using the tools that already exist. So Aaron's mentioned Indeed before. you know, Indeed is number one job board, along with a few others that come in second and third. But so it's how do you use Indeed really? You know, it's existed for a long time, and I'm sure many use it already. Most likely the use at the moment is post and pray, right? So that's like, all right, I'm gonna throw up my job. I'm gonna use the, you know, the free tool. You know, I'll get a radius close to camp and I'll pray that I get some applications. Sometimes I do, sometimes it works out. What we do here at Camp Hire is we actually study Indeed patterns on a very regular basis. Aaron and I joke that it's like, we have this bizarrely niche.
That's a very narrow, I mean, I'm sure there's a Reddit page for it, but I'd love to be part of that community.
It's a very small community.
I'm a data wonk at heart. So that's why I'm like, anything that you can turn into data points and analysis. And when you said Indeed post, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. So there's a real science behind it. The tool has a huge user base, but it's how do you actually reach the right and the targeted candidate to build a really strong pipeline. And Aaron and I and the rest of our team at Camp Hire have actually really, really nailed it. Like that is where our expertise comes in. Aaron is our Indeed guru, so I'll let him like get into the nitty gritty of it. But yeah, the tool already exists. It's just really understanding it to be able to really reach that network outside of your immediate camp.
Okay, so we're all aligned that in order to hire at scale, you have to go to a national search. And this will shock a lot of people, but we're the only tool that we find that's out there that can really host a national search the way camps need is Indeed. So if you're posting on LinkedIn, if you're posting on ZipRecruiter or some of those other sites, you're likely only getting a 25-mile radius and exposure level on your post. So if you think about that for a camp, right? Hey, I'm a camp in rural Maine and I'm posting, you know, something. I might even be paying for it. I'm probably only getting exposure to the woods and the lakes and the region, you know? It's just not getting me to the cities where I need to attract people from. So Indeed has unique features where you can pay to post on a state level and you can pay to a post on a national level. And again, going back to what we talked about before, you need a budget for this, right? So you need some money in hand. But when you're thinking about a national search, you can pick and choose the cities and states where you want your post to live. And this is a unique camp thing, right? Because we offer, in most cases, housing, we can bring somebody from California
right
over to the East Coast, set them up, and have a lot of success, right? But if we're using our local search patterns, we're never going to find those people. We're never going to reach them. So I'll give another example of where we have a lot of success, and that's in the nursing game. And there's something called compact states for nurses, right? Where a nurse, there's some nurse alliances out there, state alliances, where certifications carry over to different states. So for instance, if I know that my camp is located in a compact state, I can find a nurse that is certified in another state and bring them over to mine, right? But that takes understanding how to use the tool, right? Indeed, to go and type in those compact states into my search so that I broaden my reach. So that's something we have a lot of success in at Camp Hire. It is an element of savviness, tech savviness, but we basically promote nursing roles in compact states and feed those to camps that can take those licenses. So that's some of the key learnings here that the average camp director, I'm assuming, does not have this type of knowledge, but it's a critical nuance to the way that we recruit and the way we do our business as camp leaders.
So on broad stroke, like you said, the tools are there. And whether that whether it is, like you said, being wonky and saying, all right, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and learn about everything Aaron just said and try to go figure it out, or, you know, go ask Aaron, hey, what are y'all doing in the spring? Can we talk? It's about timing. It's about knowing the resources that are most, that get you most ROI, to use a business term. But then also I had one more kind of question, and then we'll wrap it up and you guys can let folks know how to get in touch. Is from the candidate side, because obviously, like you said, you don't just work, it's not just a one-way street. There have to be two partners ready to come together at a moment to say, let's do this. And I know that you were talking about also the camps and you, as well as candidates and you. So, I mean, timing's everything. What are you hearing from the candidate side? What's important to them outside of, you know, timing, you know, making sure that they're ready to hear about this wonderful opportunity that, you know, we all know. What are you hearing from them that camp directors might want to, you know, they might not get directly from the candidates themselves, but they should know about?
Yeah.
Esther, you should take this one and I'll set you up. You should also just mention some of the key learnings you have from Google around candidate experience, because it's not a term that's used widely in camp, right? We don't talk about candidate experience, but the good companies do, the good recruiters do.
Yeah,
that's why we're hearing it.
Yeah. So candidate experience is a term as a recruiter that you sort of own and are responsible for, right? So you have your clients and you have the hiring managers, but as a recruiter, you are the gatekeeper of the candidate experience. And that's actually why we love recruiting so much, because you're playing both sides, but you are sort of like representing the candidate. How can you help them have this positive experience that then will benefit everybody and hopefully land in a match? What are candidates looking for most is speed. It is not just camp. It is, I see it where I am at Google. It is, you know, these large tech companies. There is a need for speed. And I say that with a caveat of making sure that you're setting those expectations of what speed means. Right. So if you need to have multiple interviews and you know that it's going to take however long it's going to take, that's fine. You know, you can set those expectations. So that, again, the candidate experience is positive, but there is a need for speed in the sense of, hey, if you feel that this will be a good match, I want to feel that. I want to know that as soon as possible. I want that feedback of your interview went really well. We want to make you an offer. Or your interview went really well. We're considering other candidates at the same time, right? So the need for speed for a response and for direct next action steps. So coming from, you know, my calls with candidates, you know, in the corporate world, I end every single call with, great, it was so nice talking with you. Here's what's going to happen next. You're going to receive an email that outlines blah, 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 blah. Same thing applies, right? So you talk to a candidate, and even if you're unsure if you're going to hire them or not, ending the call with, hey, I'm going to send you a follow-up email that's going to ask for these next three things. As soon as you have that done, we'll be able to move forward with the contract or whatever it is that you want to do. So just that quick follow-up that's actually happening on the call, right? So follow-up isn't even later, it's actually now. The other part of that is if you do think that this candidate is going to be successful at your camp, if they're going to add a lot to your camp culture, please do act fast. You know, so get the contract in their hand potentially the same day. Have a follow-up email that answers those loose end questions immediately so that you can land the candidate. We do find also, you know, with our experiences that, you know, waiting a week or so can sometimes cost you a candidate that you are interested in moving forward with, which is a little bit shocking because, like, what's a week, you know? But it matters. You know, candidates really want to feel valued. And as soon as they do, they're more likely to, you know, join your team. But that value does come through in speed.
And see, I love this because you pointed out two of the main things when I talked about the world keeps spinning syndrome. They're used to a society where, you know, it's fast and they want to keep up. They are connected. But the candidate experience in camp parlance, we've been talking about culture forever. What's the culture? And just flipping it and kind of reminding ourselves, camp is a business. This is a candidate experience. And how do I want them to feel? And just putting it on that and understanding that sometimes maybe back in the day when I was younger, it was almost like you had to build FOMO and they had to be honored to be introduced to your little ring. And that's not it anymore. If they're valued, then I like what you put the second part, which is speed. Because if you think they're good, odds are somebody else is going to think they're good. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. a week might be reasonable on your end, but that week, and you know, it's not always true, but that week could mean they're talking to two other camps and one of them, they like them just as much. And they say, you want to come? Well, you know, I got a call next week. Listen, if people are ghosting you after saying yes 6 months ahead of time, they're going to skip that follow-up call 3 days from now. It's fine. Not to say that people are bad, but like you said, the needs have shifted. Speed, experience, and in kind of a seat at the table, so to speak, yeah. In many regards. Aaron, yeah. Esther, is there anything broadly speaking or narrow that we have not touched on that you want to make sure we get out there? And then also, how do folks get in touch with you after this if they want to?
Yeah, I feel like we can give maybe some tactical tips for people to understand how to improve speed this coming year. And Esther and I, and this is a term in the recruitment business used a lot, time kills deals. That's how it works. The more time that you're sitting and waiting, it's just going to kill your deal. So we are a huge advocate of speed, and here are some of the things that we've done to get there. The first thing is, if you are not using something like a DocuSign or an e-signature, you need to be. And we leverage same day offers. Almost every single person that signs up with us gets a same day offer. And what we found is that candidates match that intention. So when you have a DocuSign contract in their inbox 2 hours after the call, over 90% will match that and sign it within 1 day.
So 90%.
Over 90% will match your intention. Over 90%, right? Because you've made the effort to say, I'm gonna get it in your inbox, I'm gonna be the first one there, and I'm gonna make the commitment. And they match it. So it's huge to be able to do that. But some other tactical things you can do that will help you this year. The first thing is, open up your interview schedule times. Right, thinking about the candidate experience with people like nurses and chefs that work odd hours, offering interview candidate times at different, you know, weekends occasionally, or even evenings. Our evening interview block is highly used. That will speed things up, because then you're not waiting another week for that candidate to get on your schedule, right? It's like, oh, I can do tonight. So that's big. Other things that we recommend our camp directors do are bring everyone to the interview. You know, I know, revolutionary. But having multiple rounds of interviews leads to ghosting. And we know at Campfire, we can get people to show up for one interview. Our round two interview rates drop off tremendously. We have tons of candidates that ghost us the second time.
And real quick, when you say get everybody there, could that either be everybody at the same time or a block of time chunked out? These are the people, totally. Either or? Okay, cool.
Totally. So it could be like, hey, you're meeting with me for 30 minutes. Can you hang on for 5 on the Zoom? My colleagues, my assistant director is going to hop in, right? Cool. And then you're done.
And the decision maker needs to be on that call.
Yeah, decision maker needs to be on that call. Totally. Other tactical things, and this one's unique to camp, is that the camp application is really long. The camp application, we've done some research. The average camp application has like 10 questions on it. And things like, what's your social security number and t-shirt size? And can you write 3 or 4 open-ended questions around your love for camp? And that is a huge hurdle for a lot of candidates, right? It literally maybe an hour to fill out their application. It could be uncomfortable because they have to put their t-shirt size, which makes them feel weird. And it also leads to bias in that you're favoring those people who are good at writing, right? It comes natural too. There are some candidates who you may interview with them, love them, but your hurdle to the offer is that you have to fill out an application. And I would recommend all camps right now, do your best to not make your application be a hurdle to somebody getting an offer, because it's a big deal for someone to have to fill out 10, 12 questions in between receiving an offer after everybody's spoken to. So try to find those friction points in your process so that you can move quickly. And don't get hung up on things like applications and references. You can always use those as contingencies to the offer.
I'm sorry, there was a, yeah, bye buddy. Squirrel just ran up and was like sniffing my foot. I'm dead serious. I apologize if that was like disorienting, but Aaron, so we talk about like speed, ease of use, and it's not dumbing anything down. Speed, ease of use. I think the term we would be looking for is make it a pleasant, efficient, and value add experience, and then don't sit on it. If it feels good, you know, keep the momentum rolling. A rolling stone gathers no moss. All right, I cannot thank you both enough for this. This has been absolutely phenomenally in-depth and educational. The insights have been wonderful. I can't wait to follow up with more conversations in the future. We will surely be checking in with our friends at Camp Hire in the future, moving on when we want to talk about staffing. But between now and then, where can folks find you?
Yeah, check us out. We have a great, beautiful, refreshed website. Camphire.com. And you can find us at info@camphire.com as well.
Thank you so much, Aaron, Esther. I appreciate it so much for joining us on episode 3 of the New England Camp Podcast.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, and share the love wherever you find your podcasts. As always, questions, comments, concerns, ponderances, ironic musings, or just good camp stories, please send them to camp@acanewengland.org.